Well, good evening, folks, and welcome to this apologetics supplement video. This is the second one of these that I've done, and it's just a way for me to answer any questions that have been submitted and to give you a little bit more detail and a little bit more technical analysis, if anybody is interested in that, from the material that I covered on Sunday morning. Now, here in our apologetic series, we're looking at a cumulative case for the Christian faith. And right now we're dealing with arguments for the existence of God. And so last week we looked at some philosophical proofs that claim to be able to show that there must have been an uncaused cause. There must have been something that is not caused by anything else, but which set everything else in motion. This is essentially taken almost as a given in most philosophy and philosophical logic. And it has been for 2,500 years. And this week, we added another layer onto that and said, okay, if there's an uncaused cause, do we have reason to believe that this cause is a person of some kind, rather than just, say, some kind of strange proto-matter, in which case you would have to explain how that could possibly be there without being caused. We do have good reason to believe that the uncaused cause of the universe is a person, because the universe gives clear evidence that it was designed by something that is intentional and intelligent, something that knew what it was doing, something that knew how to do it at the highest degree of sophistication. And so we looked at scientific arguments, which are called the fine-tuning argument. It's a subset of what's called the design argument for the existence of God, essentially showing that our universe shows hallmarks of being designed. Much of this evidence has just come out really in the past 20 years, and it is very compelling. You have minds at the top of philosophy, physics, cosmology, in universities around the world who are acknowledging just how startling this evidence is. So if you haven't seen that yet, or you haven't listened to that yet, you can go back and look at our Sunday morning worship service. The video is here on our Facebook feed, where I deal with this fine-tuning argument. You can also listen to the sermon podcast on our website, callousbaptist.org. But essentially what it does is it lays out what physics and cosmology now agree is true, which is to say that there are many factors, many values in our universe, which sort of set the mathematical superstructure for how our universe takes shape. Things like the value of the gravitational force, the value of the strong nuclear force. Constants like this, the cosmological constant. These hold precise mathematical values, but there's no compelling reason why those values are set at what they are. Theoretically, if a universe developed at random, these values could be anything. But they happen to be exactly what they are, and what we've discovered is that any slight change in any of those constants would result in a universe that could not be inhabited by life. And not just our kind of life, it really would produce a universe that was absolutely inhospitable to life. And so the probability of our particular universe developing as a hospitable environment for the development of life are so minuscule as to be almost incalculable. I gave you some evidence there on Sunday morning which said that if you combine the probabilities of only two of these constants, what you find is that the chance of our universe occurring at random with these values is a number so large, one chance in a number so large, that it would take all of the elementary particles in the entire universe to write down just the number of zeros in that number. Essentially, mathematically speaking, our universe is one that simply could not have happened by chance, as far as we can see. Now, what does that imply? There are a couple, there are some attempts by skeptics to get around this evidence. And as you'll see from the arguments they offer, they have kind of a note of desperation to them. I talked on Sunday about the idea that maybe a grand unified theory will come along and explain why all these values are the way they are. But that in itself, even if we can come up with a grand unified theory, actually would not answer the question. And I gave you an example for why that's the case in my Sunday morning talk. Essentially, you just then have to explain why the grand unified theory is the way it is. Why would this theory randomly spit out a universe like ours that is so hospitable to life, and which is such a wildly unlikely result, given the probabilities that we know are involved? Today I'm going to tell you about two other attempts by skeptical philosophers and scientists to try to get around what really to me is kind of the clear intuition of this argument, which is that our universe is showing really clear evidence that it was designed, that it was crafted. So the two attempts that we're going to be looking at today are called the weak anthropic principle and the multiverse hypothesis. The weak anthropic principle, you may or may not have heard this depending on how close you keep to science news, but it's an idea that's been out there for a while. If you ever watched The Big Bang Theory, you know, that comedy show about physicists who study at out in California and all their capers and adventures. Well, there was a throwaway line in one episode that touched on the weak anthropic principle, and it didn't have anything to do with the plot of the show. It was just what appeared to be a throwaway line. They're in the cafeteria, and Leonard asks his friend Sheldon. Leonard says, "Do you believe in the weak anthropic principle?" And Sheldon replies with, I can't remember the wording exactly, but something incredibly dismissive. "No, I believe that an invisible sky fairy made the universe in only 7 days." Essentially, Sheldon's response is that you have to believe in the weak anthropic principle because what else could possibly explain the universe? Only God. He describes God in wildly objectionable terms that no serious philosopher would ever consider describing God in that way. For someone who grew up in the Bible Belt, Sheldon does not have a very robust theology of the idea of God. In any case, we're going to talk about that idea. They didn't explain it in the episode, but here's what is meant by the weak anthropic principle. So the idea behind it is that it's an acknowledgement that our universe is wildly unlikely. And if any of these values of physical constants had been even just one tiny factor off, our universe could not host life. Therefore, the idea of the weak anthropic principle is simply to observe this phenomenon and push back against the idea that this is somehow compelling or interesting evidence. The weak anthropic principle simply says our universe has to be wired this way because we're here to see it. If the universe had any other value, we wouldn't be here. There wouldn't be anyone to remark upon this. So of course our universe has these values. It has to have these values. We're here to observe it. There's no possible scenario in which the universe could have any other values and have us there to observe it. So it has to be this one. Well, that makes an intuitive kind of sense, I guess. So they're admitting the universe is wildly unlikely, but they're saying, well, okay, but there's nowhere we can go with that because we know we're here. We know our universe does host life. So none of these constants could have been anything different given the fact that we're here. Right. So it doesn't explain the unlikelihood, but it kind of brushes it off as saying, well, you know, it doesn't matter. Couldn't have been any other way. But let's think about this for a moment. I'm going to give you an example that comes from the scholar John Leslie, who illustrates why this is really an uncompelling workaround. For one thing, it's not properly a scientific theory at all. It doesn't explain anything. What it is an attempt to explain away something. John Leslie says, imagine a situation like this. Imagine that you are a criminal who is condemned to be executed by Firing Squad. And you have 50 trained marksmen. All their guns are loaded with bullets. They are all firing straight at your chest from point blank range. You know, just a couple feet away, maybe. 50 of them, just all lined up like this, right? The signal is given. They pull their triggers. All the guns go off. And the bullets don't hit you. You're still there. Every one of these expert marksmen has missed from point blank range. You are unharmed. You're still alive. Remarkable, right? Well, then a skeptic comes by and tells you the weak anthropic principle. He says, yeah, man, that's not really that remarkable because if it had happened any other way, you wouldn't still be here to notice it. Well, I hope you get the sense of just how ridiculous that is, right? The man who just survived the firing squad under those conditions would have every right to say, no, this is astonishingly remarkable that I am here to observe this. It shouldn't have happened this way. I should be dead, given everything that we know. So the skeptic who wanders by and shrugs and says, well, you know, not a big deal because you're here to see it, which means it couldn't have been any other way. That's not a compelling workaround. So we can say the same thing about the universe. They might say, well, the universe has to have these values or else we wouldn't be here. That does not answer the question. It is still astonishingly remarkable that this universe is the way it is. Because if random chance is what had spewed it out, it should not be this way. So that's the weak anthropic principle. I don't find it very compelling, but if you really, 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 really don't want to have to believe in God, then, you know, that's one you can put in your back pocket, I guess. Let's look at the second one. The second one's called the multiverse theory. And this is one that you may have heard of. It's been getting more and more press over the past couple decades. The multiverse theory posits that actually our universe is only one of many. That there are many, many universes. Millions, billions. Actually, most would say, if the multiverse theory is true, possibly an infinite number of universes out there, of which we are only one. And the nice thing for skeptics about this theory is that if you have an infinite array of universes, it evens out your probabilities. All of them can have different values for cosmological constants and gravitational forces and nuclear forces and all those things. And so for all of these many billions upon billions of other universes, none of them can host life because their values are all the wrong things. But given that there's that many universes out there, probability says you're going to have at least one that has the right values. It just comes up lucky. That wild, unthinkable probability, if you have an infinite supply of universes to blow through, you're going to get one that has those values. And lucky us. We won the lottery. We happen to be that universe. And here's where the weak anthropic principle would come in. If you believe the multiverse, then you can say, well, yeah, of course. Of course it's us, because we're here. Well, let's think about the multiverse theory. It's an interesting idea, and it's not actually just pulled out of a hat. I mean, there's some mathematical models of the origin of the universe which suggest that, you know, it's a possible scenario. Now that's a far cry from saying that there's anything compelling evidentially, you know, in terms of evidence, to actually show or prove that the multiverse exists. And this is really the hang-up of the multiverse, is that essentially you're developing a scientific theory which, as far as we know, has no possible way of ever being tested or verified. These are completely separate universes. They are beyond the scope of what we can observe or test for. So how could you ever prove the multiverse theory? In that sense, it's not really a scientific theory. It's more of a leap of faith. You can believe in an infinite number of universes that you cannot see, that you cannot observe, that you cannot prove. You just got to believe in them. You got to take that leap of faith to explain the wild unlikeliness of why you are here. Right? Well, I guess if you really want to do that, you could. But essentially what you're doing is just inventing another religion. A religion that doesn't hold up to observation or verification. It's not based in science. It's based in faith. So you're not really getting away from faith if you skeptics want to believe in the multiverse. It's simply a way of explaining away the possibility of God. I would suggest that Occam's razor, that, you know, philosophical rule of thumb, suggests that God is the much more reasonable answer, right? Rather than having to posit an infinite number of unobservable realities just to explain the reality you're in, you can explain it the way philosophers have explained it even before Christ came, which is that our universe is explainable by one entity, one reality, one uncaused cause, whom we call God, the summit of all perfection, infinite in power and wisdom and beauty. The philosopher Stephen Barr says about the multiverse theory, in an effort to avoid the hypothesis of God, scientific materialists are frequently driven to hypothesize the existence of an infinity of unobservable entities. It seems that to abolish one unobservable God, it takes an infinite number of unobservable substitutes. Given that fact, and given the fact that we have many other arguments which also offer compelling reasons to believe in the existence of God, it seems to me that the most reasonable choice, far and away, is to believe that the evidence our universe gives us, the evidence that we apparently live in a designed reality, to believe that that's true. To believe that there is a God who made all this. It's not only the simplest answer and the most reasonable answer, it also happens to be the answer that far and away the vast majority of human societies throughout the ages have held to. That there's a creator who made all this. Right? So I don't consider the multiverse theory persuasive at all. It strikes me as a wild leap of faith. And in point of fact, a lot of other scientists now are admitting the same and trying to come up with other theories, including really sort of wild ones, such that perhaps our universe is a holographic reality of some kind. Perhaps it is a computer simulation of some kind. These are real scientific theories that are being posited out there right now. I'm not making that up. But they're driven to do this by the evidence. The evidence is compelling that our universe should not be the way it is if it is simply the product of random chance. And I believe we have the best answer for why our universe is the way it is. It is the creation of a good, wise, and all-knowing God. And we have very good reason to believe that's the case. So thanks for watching. If you want some book recommendations to track some of these things down, a good one to start, very, very accessible, is Lee Strobel's book, The Case for the Creator. I think we may have a copy of that in our church library. Another one that just came out is The Return of the God Hypothesis by Dr. Stephen Meyer. And then you can also look up any of the books or articles by Dr. Hugh Ross, who has done a lot of work on this fine-tuning argument. So that'll do it for us today. Once again, if you'd like to submit a question to me, you can just send me an email, msburden@yahoo.com. You can drop a note in our question and answer box at church. We'll have a Wednesday night Bible study for you tomorrow night, a call to prayer, 7 on Friday. And then we'll be back with another apologetics talk on Sunday morning. So thanks for watching. God bless.